Hello, everybody, and welcome to another beautiful Thursday morning. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Queen on the Progressive Radio Network. And I have a great show planned for all of you today. My guest is Mark Castile from the Cornucopia Institute. He is the co-founder and right now also acts as the Senior Farm Policy Analysis and co-director. And he'll be joining me on in just a little bit. But first, of course, I want to share with you some things that are going on in the news, some events you might want to participate, and of course, my weekly recipe. So first, I just want to share with you that this past weekend, I hosted the kirtan singer Krishna Das out at the Cinema Arts Center in Huntington. And it was just a wonderful, wonderful event. It was a fundraiser for both Orchestai Farm and Elijah Farm, which are two farms that work with young adults on the autistic spectrum. And they are just doing incredible work. And I know that Krishna Das has been developing many of his songs to stay calming and mellowing, meaning that normally when you're singing kirtan, there are Indian chants that are very often call and response. As you sing them, they speed up and they get a little louder and quicker paced, which for someone who's on the autistic spectrum could get them more hyper and active and not be the calming effect that you want it to have. So he just came out with a new CD specifically designed for people that are looking to use this music as a tool to help them relax and stay calm. It's also a great CD for meditation and for yoga and for massage. But basically, we had him come out to introduce these new chants to us and to sing. And I've gone to many of these kirtans, and they're always wonderful. And when you leave, you're always kind of on a high. But then you leave and you go about your day, and there's no time to really interact with everyone else that shared that experience. Here at the cinema, one of the reasons I love having events there is they have a beautiful cafe. So after the kirtan, everyone was able to come back into the cafe, share in some refreshments. You know, the cinema always puts out cheese and crackers and hummus. And then because I knew there would be young people there that are watching their diet intake with food allergies and stuff, I made gluten-free cookies and sugar-free and nut-free cobbler. And everyone came back in and were able to share and mingle and really support each other in this beautiful energy, which was so needed because we came out and the confirmation of Brett Kavanaugh had just been finished and he was now approved as a Supreme Court. And so people really, you know, have been watching this drama unfold over the past couple of weeks, and it was just really perfect timing. We all needed the love that we came out with to go forth into the world with the bipartisan division that's going on in our country right now. So anyway, that was just a wonderful event. We raised a lot of money for these two farms and everybody really had a great time. And then I invited all my friends from the kirtan back to my home for a nice intimate dinner, and it was just beautiful. But speaking about Brett Kavanaugh and our divided country, I want to encourage everybody to get out to vote. October 12th is coming up, and that's the last day that you can register to vote in New York State. And we need to get everybody out to vote. If you know someone that's not registered, please help them register. I have a link on my website where you can find what the deadlines are for every state, along with how to go about registering. You can do it online, you can do it by mail, or you can go into an office and do it in person. But please do it because we need everybody to get out there and vote. There's a Long Island Food Conference that I'm very involved in that is coming up on November 3rd that I want to share with you. We're actually doing a kickoff film screening Friday evening, November 2nd. The whole conference is taking place at LIU Post, which is in Brookville, Long Island, about 30 minutes outside of New York City. So it's not far from the city. And we have a great lineup of people that are going to be speaking. But the film we're screening is called What the Health. And it's a wonderful film that really examines the link between diet and disease and exposes the collusion and corruption and the influence that big business has on our government policies. And I'm sure Mark Castile and I will be talking more about that later in the show. So this is a great film. I encourage all of you to come out to see it if you are in the New York area. Dr. Charles Van Tresca will be joining us following the film to help lead a discussion and Q&A session. And he is an acupuncturist, chiropractor, and natural medicine doctor from Birchill Natural Medicine on Long Island. And then for the food conference on November 3rd, which also is taking place at LIU, it's a whole day event starting at 8 in the morning for registration. Frances Moore Lapay will be our keynote speaker. She is the author of the, over millions of copies sold of Diet for a Small Planet. It's a wonderful, wonderful book. She was way ahead of her time. It was the book that really inspired me to stop eating meat back when I was 16. And she is the co-founder of the Small Planet Institute, along with her daughter, Anna Lapay. Then we have four different panels, two in the morning and two in the afternoon. In the morning, we will be talking about food policy and justice. And we have Tom Colicchio on that panel, a famous chef and food policy activist, along with Karen Washington, who is a farmer and also a food activist. And then that panel will be followed by Food and Climate Change with representatives from Food and Water Watch, NOFA New York, and Feedback, which is a wonderful organization rescuing food and giving it back to people. Then we have a plant-based lunch catered for everybody who is attending the conference. We also are providing breakfast before the conference starts. And then in the afternoon, the first session is Food as Medicine, and we have Dr. Robert Graham coming, who is a Harvard-trained doctor, integrative medicine, just opened his own practice called Fresh Med after starting a rooftop garden at Mount Sinai Hospital. And he also just completed a 9-month chef training program at the Natural Gourmet Institute. So he's really been teaching doctors how to cook and how to teach their patients how to cook, recognizing the connection that good food has on one's health. Then Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse, will be joining that panel, along with Sally Fallon from the Weston Price Foundation. And then the last panel is Growing Food. We have Fred Lee from Sangley Farms, which is a very large CSA organic farm out on Long Island that has been in family business for many generations. And he'll be talking about his CSA. Then Michael Dole from Montauk Shellfish Company is also a research scientist at Southampton College, part of Stony Brook University. And then Stefan Oberman, he'll be here from Arrow Farms, which is the huge factory size hydroponic farm that is providing lots of fresh vegetables to New York City, right in Newark, New Jersey. So they'll be with us. So it's a full day. We'll be finishing it up again with a wine and cheese reception. Like I said, you know, for me, the power of food, of when things are over, bringing everybody together and having everyone have an opportunity to mingle and to talk about their experiences and to meet each other is so important in building community. And that's what I Eat Green is really all about. I love building community. We're not in Portland. We're not in Brooklyn here on Long Island. And, you know, there are people with consciousness, but we're mixed in with everybody else. And so it's really important when we have these events to get to know each other and to know that there's other people of like mind out there and to really try to make those connections. I Eat Green is celebrating our 24th year cooking for the homeless this year. Every year we gather community together at the I Eat Green Homestead in Old Westbury to cook for the folks that come out to the mobile food pantry with the River Fund New York, which is the largest food pantry in New York City. And every other Tuesday, they are already at Rufus King Park in Jamaica, Queens. And the Tuesday before Thanksgiving every year for the past 24 years, we join them and serve up a huge Thanksgiving feast. I do cook turkey. That is one time a year that I'm actually cooking meat. We get over 60 turkeys donated, plus we get at least 20 or so donated that people have already cooked in their homes. We get hundreds and hundreds of pounds of potatoes donated, sweet potatoes donated, stuffing, everything that we buy for traditional Thanksgiving feasts. And then all the volunteers that are at my house over the 3-day period leading up to it cook everything, and we serve in Luther's King Park. And it's really a wonderful event. We feed about 700 to 800 people in the park, and we have enough food for another couple hundred that gets delivered to soup kitchens or homeless shelters. So in addition to this, we do a huge coat collection. So if you have any coats, blankets, sleeping bags, anything to help people who don't have heat during the winter stay warm, we would appreciate it. And you can drop that off also at the IE Green Homestead. If you don't know where we are, shoot me an email and I will give you the address. But it's really a great event. We need to, again, come together as community and push the New York State Comptroller, Tom DiNapoli, to divest state funds from fossil fuels. 350.org years ago started this huge divestment push to try to get, they first started with universities, you know, after seeing how that worked with the apartheid movement. It was so successful that they are using it for the divestment purpose and trying to get these large colleges with huge endowments to divest from all fossil fuel companies. But it has also come to our attention that New York State, their fund, their fund for all of the people that have benefits from New York State, they invest heavily in fossil fuels, and we are trying to push them to divest. And there was actually a study that came out that by Corporate Knights that showed that if New York State Pension Fund had divested from fossil fuels a decade ago, they would actually have $22 billion more dollars in their investment fund. And, you know, I wrote about this on my in my newsletter. It's on my website if you want more details. But it's just, you know, it is a growing area, investing in alternative energies, in things that are going to do good for the planet and good for the future is really, really essential. And we as people have the power to really encourage our government officials to do that. So please send Tom DiNapoli email, or you can call him. It's all on my website of how you can do that. So please check that out. Of course, we're trying to also get the Environmental Protection Agency to ban glyphosate. Glyphosate is the chemical that's found in Monsanto's herbicide Roundup, has been proven to cause cancer, and it's also wreaking havoc on our bee population, as I'm sure many of you have heard over the years. So we really want to push for that as well. A couple other things that you can do to take action. Right now, there is a proposed bill that Trump has proposed that would make it really risky for immigrant families to participate in any governmental programs, whether it be the SNAP program, formerly known as the food stamps, or Medicaid, or any of the government programs, that if they participate in those, they will be denied a green card. So now we're having immigrant families that are going to have to choose whether or not they want to feed their families or stay on the path of becoming legal. And it's just a really bad situation. So please check out that article on my website as well. I want to tell you about some things going on in and around the area that you may want to participate in. Starting October 11th, which is today, is the New York City Wine and Food Festival. And that will be going on all weekend long. There's events going on throughout the New York City region. There's over 500 world-renowned chefs being represented, culinary personalities, over 100 wineries are participating. So check out the different events there. Again, I have links to all of these on my website, or you can just look up, Google the New York City Wine and Food Festival, and you'll find more information. There is also the 6th annual Honeybee Conference coming up. It's organized by the Long Island Beekeepers Club, and that's taking place from October 14th out on Long Island in Brentwood. The third annual Hudson Valley Farmhouse Ale Competition and Captain Lawrence Takeover is taking place also on October 14th. And this is a fundraiser for Riverkeeper, which is a wonderful nonprofit organization working to keep the Hudson River clean. So that should be a fun event. That's up in the Hudson Valley. October 16th is the 25th annual Taste of the Harvest, which is a fundraiser for Island Harvest Food Bank, which is also out here on Long Island. They have over 50 Long Island chefs represented along with an open bar and great speakers, and that is something you may want to participate in. October 18th is the Food Bites New York City. That's funded by RoboBank, which is a small independent bank that really funds agricultural projects. I know they're doing a lot of work over in Africa with different nations and helping to support some small farm projects. But anyway, this is a pitch competition. That should be a lot of fun. You can look that up also. October 18th, the Coalition for Healthy School Food is having their annual fundraiser. This event is a great event. I go every year and usually table there with some delicious vegan food. This is a complete plant-based event. This year, the theme is our heroes creating real change, and they're honoring form filmmakers. The filmmakers from Forks Over Knives, Lunch Hour, Plant Pure Nation, and Vegucated. So if you are free October 18th, come out and support the Coalition for Healthy School Food. Great organization. Slow Food New York City is having their sustainable seafood panel on October 22nd. And then, as I mentioned earlier, November 3rd is the Long Island Food Conference that you want to participate in. It's going to be a great day. So you can get your tickets. We really priced it so that everybody can really afford to come. It's only $30 right now for early bird special. If you're a student, it's only $15. After October 22nd, the price goes up to just $40. So it's really affordable. If that's still too much for you, you can shoot over an email to the North Shore Land Alliance, and they will help fund a ticket for you, because we do have some funds to help those that really can't make it for the $30. So my recipe this week is a vegan cashew pesto lasagna. It's really good. I used to make this using organic tofu, and since my discovery of cashew cream over the last few years, I have incorporated this recipe using cashew pesto cream instead. So to make a vegan pesto, you want 4 cups of basil leaves, 8 garlic cloves, 3/4 cup toasted pine nuts, 1 cup of olive oil, 3/4 teaspoon salt, 1/4 teaspoon pepper, and then I usually like to add also 1/4 cup of good tasting nutritional yeast to that. And in a food processor, you're going to pulse the basil first until it's finely chopped, then add the garlic, cloves, the salt, pepper, and pine nuts. Pulse it some more, scraping down the sides to incorporate all of the mixture. And when it's fully pureed, add the olive oil slowly, dripping it while the food processor is running. And the mixture will become really thick. And then you can add the nutritional yeast. Then for the filling, I'm sorry, we're having some noise in the background that's in the way. But just try to ignore that. The filling, 3 cups of cashews soaked for 2 to 3 hours, 3 cups of water, 1 tablespoon apple cider vinegar, 1/2 cup of nutritional yeast, 1/4 teaspoon salt, and then the vegan pesto from the recipe above. And you're going to puree all of that filling in the food processor as well. First the cups of the cashews, then you add the water, then you add the apple cider vinegar, and then the nutritional yeast. And once it's all smooth, then you can add the vegan pesto from above. I also make a little spinach mixture to create a layer of spinach. And I use 1 cup of sauteed onions, 1 pound of frozen spinach, and 1 tablespoon of chopped garlic. And that I saute in a pan separately and use that as an inner layer in the lasagna as well. For the sauce, I do use jarred sauce. I use 1 32-ounce jar of marinara sauce. You also need a box of whole wheat or rice noodles. I usually use DeBoles organic rice, brown rice noodles. And that way this recipe is not only vegan, but it's also gluten-free because I never know who's coming to my table. So that really satisfies most people. And a quarter cup of chopped parsley. And so you're going to make the pesto according to the directions that I just said. For the sauce, I saute an onion and some garlic. I like to put peppers in as well. And I saute those. And when all the vegetables are soft, I add a quarter cup of white wine to that and let that cook down for about 5 minutes. Then I add the jar of marinara sauce and a quarter cup of chopped parsley to that. And just let that cook down a little while. And while that's happening, you're going to pulse the cashews in the food processor and make the cashew cream and add the pesto to that. And you're also sauteing up the spinach and the onions. And then for layering it, you're going to start with a Pyrex lasagna pan or a deeper lasagna pan if you have one. You cover the bottom of the lasagna pan with the sauce first. Then you add a layer of the noodles. Now, I do not cook the noodles, and I do not buy any noodles that say no cooked noodles, because if they say no cooked noodles, basically they just made them really thin, and then I find they come out too mushy. So you really want to just use regular lasagna noodles, and we're putting enough sauce and moisture from the cashew cream that the noodles cook in the sauce and they become a little al dente and they're really delicious like that. So you just take the noodles right out of the box and make it one even layer of noodles over the sauce. Then you spread one half of the cashew pesto cream evenly over the noodles, one half of the spinach mixture, and then half of, I hadn't said that you're going to use a pound of your favorite vegan mozzarella cheese, and you're going to put half of that in there as well. Then you're going to repeat the process with noodles, cashew pesto cream, and then finish it off with the, then top it with the spinach. And then rather than putting another layer of noodles right then, you're going to put sauce on top, then the noodles, and then sauce again. And you're going to cover that with tin foil and bake it for 45 minutes. And that will be not fully cooked, but mostly cooked. At that point, remove it from the oven, take the tin foil off, put the remaining vegan mozzarella cheese on top and return it to the oven for the last 15 minutes. And that will give it enough time for the for it to finish baking and also for the vegan mozzarella cheese to melt, but not burn. And then remove it from the oven, let it sit for a few minutes before cutting into it, sprinkle it with some fresh chopped parsley, and voila, you have a wonderful meal. You can make a full pan, even if you're not a full family and it's just a few of you, you can then freeze it. It freezes really well. So you can take the leftovers and put it in the freezer and take it out in portions as you need it. So it is now my pleasure to introduce to all of you my guest this week. Mark Castile is the founder of the Cornucopia Institute, or the co-founder of the Cornucopia Institute, which is a farm policy research group based in Wisconsin. And he acts as the senior farm policy analysis and co-director. And he directs its Organic Integrity Project. And for almost 20 years prior to Cornucopia, he was president of Castile and Associates Incorporated. His professional practice included political consulting, lobbying on behalf of family farm groups, and business development work benefiting family-scale farmers. Mr. Castile has played a key role in a number of cooperative ventures designed to empower farmers in the marketplace. His development work has focused on creating sustainable farmer-owned businesses with an emphasis on dairy production and marketing. Mark, are you with me?
I think I am.
You are. I hear you loud and clear. Thank you for joining me this morning.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
I love your website. I recommend it to everyone all the time. Your scorecards and the research that you do is just phenomenal, and I depend on you so much. So thank you.
Thank you for your kind words.
Sure. So can you first share with everyone how you first got involved in the food movement and what your inspiration behind starting Cornucopia was?
Sure. And we've been around 15 years, so I should probably update my resume that you were reading on the website. I really don't know how I got involved in the food industry. I was studying art and I enjoyed traveling out in rural northern Illinois and Wisconsin. And I thought that was my entree, doing architectural photography of farm buildings. But I when my parents moved out of their home into a smaller living space a number of years ago, they gave me a box of baby memorabilia and child little mementos. And in it was a book that I had written and illustrated. It was bound in yarn. It was probably from second grade. And it was entitled Farming is Good. So I'm not sure how this kid that didn't grow up on a farm got so enamored with that. But during art school, I took a summer job with the International Harvester Tractor Company, and that really changed my life. They ended up paying for my schooling at night, along with a couple other agribusinesses. And I've always thought that farming is really our highest calling. I'm sure you can't name another profession that's more important to our well-being than farmers. And I supported them through the technology side for many years until I got sick. And I was virtually disabled. It was thought that it was a direct result of pesticide poisoning, but my immune system was injured. I was lucky enough to see the country's preeminent environmental allergist, who said, among other things, that I should be on all organic food while I was healing. And I had already had a very healthy whole foods diet before there was any store by that name. But organics wasn't really readily available in the market in the 70s, early 80s, and when I made my switch. And so I began eating all organically, gardening organically, farming organically, and it pretty soon became impossible philosophically to sell 400 horsepower tractors and chemical sprayers to monocrop producers. So not only did I get really healthy, having changed my diet, but changed my professional trajectory. And since then, I had worked with startups, organic farmer-owned cooperatives, other business ventures. And when it looked like the wheels could fall off of this train, what was so lovingly launched by farmers and consumers partnering together, organic food, was being co-opted by corporate investment. And that's when we formed the Cornucopia Institute 14 and a half years ago as an organic industry watchdog.
Yeah, and it's so necessary. I mean, you know, all these wonderful little organic organizations that start as with a real idealistic approach and philosophy, then get bought out by big corporations, and that is no longer the guiding light. Bottom line becomes the guiding light.
Yeah, you mentioned our website, and I'm going to spell that for your listeners, because there are people who work here can't even spell Cornucopia, but it's Cornucopia. That's cornucopia.org. And on there, if you scroll down the right column on the homepage, there's a chart entitled Who Owns Organic? And it really illustrates just what you're saying, that first, the corporate agribusinesses all fought us. If organic food was better, it might mean that all the other conventional food is worse. And but then when they saw this train barreling down the tracks, they all bought many of the leading brands. And in most cases, they don't disclose their ownership. So most people don't know that Cascadian Farms and Muir Glen tomato products are owned by General Mills, because on the label, the ownership says Small Planet Foods. Mm-hmm. Doesn't that sound nice?
Yeah, well, I remember boycotting Muir Glen when they joined the Hobby Lobby, project.
I think you're confused. I think that was Eden Foods. And, but
Muir Glen was, yeah, Eden Foods too.
Yeah, and ironically, Eden Foods is, forget their politics for a second, they're one of the highest integrity firms doing just what you're suggesting. They've never been bought out, so they've never betrayed their value in terms of organic production approach and sourcing. But at any rate, we've got Kellogg's and General Mills and Dean Foods, the largest milk bottler in the country, and many other agribusinesses kind of hiding behind a facade and owning some of these brands. And I, as a corporate and governmental watchdog, I like to say, these issues are about corporate ethics, not scale. So ironically, and I really don't know the details on Muir Glen, but General Mills does some good things. So they came out with, they bought the, one of the labels they bought was Annie's, and they brought out Annie's organic yogurt, and they sourced all their milk from family farms, not factory farms. They have another yogurt brand called Liberté. They switched that to organic milk from conventional milk. So, after taking some criticism from Cornucopia, they switched most of their sourcing for Cascadian Farms frozen vegetables from China and other foreign countries that we don't really trust to mostly American. And so they respond to pressure from our community. We're in the education and research business, and our job is to empower you and your listeners to make good marketplace choices. And our information has resulted in millions of dollars worth of market share shifting. You folks have power. Organic farmers don't have much power, but our allies, our urban allies who shop and demand quality and authenticity can change the world.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Can you talk a little bit about the scorecards that Cornucopia does? Those are, just amazing.
Sure. Thank you. So it used to be that I was just an evangelist for organics, period. And the true foundational precepts that this organic farming movement and food movement were founded upon, obviously are meritorious. So not only do we protect our families and provide safer, more nutritionally dense food, more flavorful food, but there are a lot of byproducts to those purchasing decisions. So we get to have a say as consumers in how our planet is stewarded. So much of our the erosion of our environmental quality and issues like climate change are driven by how we decide to farm. We can decide how the animals that are in our food system are cared for. Are they cared for with respect? Do they have a good life while they're on this planet? And we can decide to pay a little more so that economic justice for farmers is built right into the price. And that was a good thing. It's still a great concept, but the problem is it's now morphed into the reality of we have two organic labels. They both have that USDA seal. And as a consumer, it's impossible if you're standing in front of the dairy cooler, as an example, to tell which brand of milk with the USDA organic seal comes from a factory farm with thousands of cows. There's one with 15,000 cows on a giant feedlot surrounded by some token pasture. Or which brand comes from family scale farmers, has that same USDA seal. But in those cases, it's a humane scale of farming. It treats the people better. The cows have a happy cow life. They're on grass. They're likely to have names, not numbers, and have been cared for usually by the children when they're calves up through their lifespan and have a relationship with the people. Their manure is recycled on the land that grows their feed. Unlike the factory farm that might import the majority of their feed from former Soviet bloc states in Eastern Europe or China that we don't really trust. And then how do you recycle that manure? Well, you don't. And so it breaks the promise that that we're practicing regenerative, truly sustainable agriculture and organic. So how do you tell when you're standing in front of that dairy cooler which one contains that promise? If you're standing in front of the vegetable produce department, which brand that says it's organic is produced in rich, lush, organic soils that convey a much higher nutrient level to the food, and which brands come from hydroponic, giant, industrial-sized warehouses under artificial lighting with liquid fertilizers taking the place of soil, which you can't really do. It doesn't take the place. So how do you know that? Well, you know that because you can go to the Cornucopia Institute website, and we have developed a number of research projects and associated scorecards where we look at, for instance, in dairy, there are 160 organic brands of dairy products, from milk to cheese to butter to ice cream. And you can figure out which ones support family farmers and humane animal husbandry, which ones would provide milk with higher levels of omega-3 fatty acids, CLA, and other beneficial compounds, and which would be more like conventional milk, maybe not with the chemical residues, but maybe not with all the other positive externalities that truly make it worth more.
Mm-hmm. And what about if you're at a store and a brand that you want to buy is not listed on your scorecard? Is there a way for someone to, how can someone actually find out if it's a real organic quality product or not?
Absolutely. So number one, these scorecards are mobile friendly and responsive. So you can go to cornucopia.org when you're standing in front of the dairy cooler or the egg case or the department where they sell soy foods, and you can look for your favorite brand. If it's not on there, and that's a pretty rare exception these days because we do crowdsource this. We get lots of inquiries, just as you're suggesting. If you see a local brand and you want us to independently rate it and report back to you, just go to our website. There's a contact page. Use that form or send us an email, and we will check it out. And if appropriate, we will add them to the scorecard. The criterion basically is that, A, they have to be certified organic. We're only looking at organic brands, although there are some comparisons we make. We review all yogurt brands to figure out which ones are truly health food and which are junk food. And that is both conventional and organic, and even toothpaste. So, but most of our scorecards really only critique organic offerings. So one, we will assure that it's certified organic, and B, the two, one and B, we want to make sure that it's available at retail so that consumers can find it. And then we'll tell them a little bit about geography where. So if it's just a neighbor that sells fresh eggs off the farm or raw milk, unpasteurized milk off the farm, we just can't list those all. We give you a little advice in our report on how to gauge local farms, especially if they're not certified organic. We have a DIY, do-it-yourself certification guide on our website, because if you go to the farmer's market, there's so many wonderful farms that aren't certified, and we really still highly encourage certification. But if for whatever reason these farms aren't going through that process, they don't need to because they're only direct selling, then you can use this guide to figure out the important questions to ask them in terms of how they produce the food. And most of these farmers will let you visit. So it's a big red flag if you go to the farmer's market and say, do you have an open house sometime in the summer, or can I come by sometime? And if they just flatly say no, you better ask some additional questions.
Right. Mark, I want to take a couple minute break. And when we come back, I'd like to talk a little bit more about some of the imported products that you say we can't trust, because there's so many of those. So everyone listening, don't go anywhere. I'm talking with Mark Castile from the Cornucopia Institute. Be right back.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, the founder of the Progressive Radio Network. Today, we have more than 80 producers bringing forth the most progressive and most liberating information, the kind of information you do not regularly hear on any of the mainstream or alternative media. You can help us now Up to this point, I have virtually supported the Progressive Radio Network, all of its expenses and payroll, myself. But we would like to expand our reach. We'd like to do far more. We'd like to be able to advertise on Facebook and let others know we exist. We are the number one progressive radio network in the world. In fact, we have programs that are most listened to in all of progressive radio. But we could go a lot further. Our message could reach a lot more people, especially at a time when people are desperate for honest, objective insights on the important topical issues of our day. How can you help? It's simple. Go to prn.fm, go to our main page. In the upper right-hand corner, you'll see a little button, Support Now. And then whatever you can contribute on a monthly basis will make a big difference. It will help get the message out. It will help inform more people, will give them more choices. This is where you'll hear in the independent candidates and the people looking to challenge the corruption in government and industries. But we need to get our reach out further. So please, whatever you can afford on a monthly basis, and there's some suggestions there, and it'll be automatic. All right, thank you very much for continuing to help us help you and the rest of the world on these important issues.
Everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And Mark Castile is here with me from the Cornucopia Institute. We're talking about organic labeling. And right before the break, I was asking about imported foods. We import so much of our organic foods from South America, Latin America, and overseas like China. And I just don't know if we can really trust that label. So Mark, can you shed some light on that for us?
I'd be happy to. And first, I apologize. I usually do this with radio people and send them the phonetic pronunciation, but my name is Castel with the emphasis on the second syllable. Sorry. But more importantly, it's Cornucopia because that's the resource for your listeners. And one of the new resources that will be available momentarily, so it's going to be released either still this week, maybe today or early next week. And that is a guide. It's called Against the Grain. And it'll be looking at the improprieties in imports. And we've started out primarily focusing on feed grain for animals. So whether that's dairy or beef cows or chickens or the turkeys you were talking about for your holiday meal or did I mention eggs, and dairy products. Most of those animals can consume some grain. There are some brands of beef and dairy that are 100% grass. They're the exception. They offer some advantages your listeners might be aware of. But I asked the rhetorical question to many of our farmers members when I visit that are so committed to organic integrity. And I say, is your milk or meat or eggs organic if what you're feeding them isn't organic? And obviously that's a very distressful question to ask them because if they don't grow 100% of their own grain, which is certainly not unusual in places like New York State and Vermont and the Northeast where you're not in the grain belt like close to Iowa and here in Wisconsin we can grow a lot of corn, then you have to buy some. And if your local grain elevator or feed supplier might be slipping in some imported products from Turkey or Romania, where they don't even grow enough organics in those countries to fill the ships that they're sending to the U.S., where the ships they were sending to Europe have been turned away because the Europeans discovered fraud, set up some really strong systems of oversight, And then that shifted the floodgates of the tidal wave of these organic grains into the U.S. So we really need to take a closer look at that. One of our researchers, Ann Ross, has. We've published a couple important reports already on our website, but today or early next week, we will be releasing a scorecard which will identify the brands, and I'm sorry to say there aren't that many that really have tight enough controls to know, but the brands of organic poultry, eggs, and dairy products that assure that 100% of what their animals eat were grown here in North America. And we think there's a much higher level of regulatory oversight. We're not finding the gross wholesale fraud that we found with the imports. So that's one way for consumers to empower themselves, to make sure their families are truly getting that safe and nutrient-dense organic food they're paying for. And it's a way to reward these heroes that have gone out of their way, in some cases paying more for these products. And so that's the way capitalism works. We want to vote with our pocketbooks in the marketplace.
Absolutely. With voting and the elections coming up right now, you also have as one of your scorecards, a GMO voting scorecard. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, I haven't looked at that in a long time, but that's a good resource to know who's voted along with Monsanto, who's voted to deprive our right to know what's in our food, and who's sided with the lobbyists at the grocery manufacturers of America, these big corporations that don't want informational labeling, because they know that a pretty fair percentage of their clientele, like in Europe, given the choice, will seek out non-GMO and organic products. So flex your muscles in the voting booth, please.
Absolutely. Now, what makes products like carrageenan so difficult to get out of organic foods? I mean, it's been proven to be carcinogenic, although I'm sure some people will question that research. But, you know, most people that are eating organic would rather not see those products in our baby food and all those alternative milk products. What can we do to get that out, and why is it so difficult to get it out of the organic label?
Well, carrageenan is a product we researched in depth because it's on the list of approved synthetic or non-organic ingredients used in organic food production. And there's nothing inherently wrong with that. The example I like to use of a synthetic which is appropriate is baking powder. We can't have organic cupcakes, which I enjoy, without a leavening agent. There's no such thing as organic baking powder. And it's gone through a very rigorous analysis to make sure it's not dangerous to human health and doesn't ruin the environment. But there are other ingredients like carrageenan, which is seaweed-based. So it started out natural. But we have the right in organics to prohibit some natural products. So we don't allow nicotine, as an example, to be used, or tobacco as a insecticide, even though it's natural. We don't allow arsenic to be used in poultry production, and it's been used in conventional poultry production, even though arsenic is natural. And in the case of carrageenan, and I also like to say, quoting one of our former staff members, that poison ivy is natural too, but we wouldn't want that in our food. And so carrageenan is a coagulant. It is a thickener. It keeps, for instance, chocolate milk in suspension. So if you don't want to go to that arduous task of shaking your child's chocolate milk before you pour it, it will keep that from settling out. Independent research funded by the National Institutes of Health have shown that it's a potent inflammatory agent. So how many of us don't suffer or know someone who suffers from inflammatory bowel disease, irritable bowel syndrome, colitis, spastic colon, all these lower GI distresses. And this is a very potent stimulator. And as you said, there is some peer-reviewed public research that indicates it's a carcinogen. The only research that shows it's safe is the research that's funded by the carrageenan industry or the food industry. And so if it has no business being in organics, and after 10 years, we actually convinced the National Organic Standards Board, the advisory panel set up by Congress to remove it. But the USDA overruled that. The political appointees at the USDA overruled that. And so we put a lot of pressure on the industry, and almost every organic manufacturer has taken it out of their products, whether it's yogurt or heavy whipping cream or the plant-based beverages. On our website is a buyer's guide, like our scorecard, to the carrageenan industry. And it lists every brand that you can trust and many that you can't, that you can find in every product category, whether you're buying a soy drink or, again, heavy whipping cream and that doesn't have carrageenan. But you have to look at these labels very carefully, because even luncheon meat, so these processed meats, cold cuts, chicken and other material, they'll put carrageenan in. So we know that there are people who have been very judicious in terms of purging carrageenan from their diet and had almost instant relief in terms of these gastrointestinal symptoms. And it's not just the acute symptoms. It's these are the coal mine canaries, just like I was virtually disabled after pesticide exposure. Most of us have immune systems that can overcome this. And but the chronic symptoms or asymptomatic expression after ingesting carrageenan for a lifetime can certainly be a danger. So even if you're not a sufferer, you should think about getting this out of the diet for yourself and your family.
Mm-hmm. And what about, you know, it seems like most of the products that have removed the carrageenan have then replaced it with some other coagulant, like Gargum or something else.
Right.
Is there any downside to those other products?
Well, there are speculation that there could be concern. Excuse me. Gargum, at least there's a source of certified organic Gargum. So that's at least we're not exposing ourselves to agrochemicals used in its processing. You know, myself, I subscribe to Michael Pollan, the author of The Omnivore's Dilemma and
right.
Food Rules. I subscribe to his number one rule, eat food. And so I'm sorry, especially for our vegan friends, it becomes very hard because lots of the products that they substitute to create proteins in their diet aren't really food. They're really very, very highly processed. So I'm concerned, and we do have a pet food report, incidentally, on our website, but I'm more concerned about my cats who have Gargum in their certified organic food right now. But there's little, if any, in my diet because I eat whole foods, because I eat whole, I buy fresh vegetables and fruits and grains and meat and dairy products. And virtually none of these are processed. And it takes me a little longer to cook. It really does. But the fact that I'm in my 60s now, I'm not on any prescription. When I go for a checkup, they can't believe that because the average American takes 5 different prescription medications every day. And in terms of weight control, we really need to eat healthy fat and whole foods, and then we can eat almost as much as we want. Products like carrageenan are really only required in these processed foods, and many of them, they're not required. One of the brands available in the Northeast that sells organic chocolate milk puts right on their label, shake it, baby, no carrageenan. That's a marketing advantage. And because what's in there? There's milk and there's cocoa and there's a sweetener and that's it. And
right.
And so these more exotic food ingredients aren't present.
Right. Same with, you know, salad dressings. I mean, you know, if you're going to put, you know, olive oil and balsamic vinegar on your, you know, dressing, You know, it doesn't need to be stabilized. You don't need to have the herbs floating there so that you don't have to shake the bottle. I mean, who decided that shaking a, you know, salad dressing bottle is too difficult?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, we're almost out of time. Is there anything you'd like to share with us before we sign off that I missed?
I'd just like to reemphasize that we can make a difference by doing our homework. The organic label was supposed to be the shortcut, but to protect our families and protect our best farmers, now it's only the beginning. So I would encourage you to go to our website, cornucopia.org. Optionally, you can join and financially support our work. There's a button there for donations, or we have a free email that goes out on a biweekly basis that will keep you engaged in some of these issues. And you can sign up for the free email right on our homepage, cornucopia.org.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Mark, for joining me today. It's been so informative. And like I said, I really use your website as a resource so often and recommend it to everybody because the work you're doing is phenomenal. And we, you know, we need to know that there's organizations out there that we can trust because as individuals, there's no way we can do all that research ourselves. So we need to be able to go to trusted sources that we can, that we know are doing the right thing. So thank you.
Well, thanks for your kind words and visiting our website and flexing your muscles is a way that your listeners can directly partner and support these farmers that are working so hard for the betterment of our planet and our species.
Absolutely. And everyone out there who joined us today, thank you so much for joining us. You've been listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. See you all next week. Bye for now.